When you're a Delta SkyMiles Reserve American Express card member, your favorite meal in another city is just an online booking away. Así que conocerás dónde se consigue el mejor pan dulce to have with your morning cafecito en LA. Where's the best pupusería in the Bay? ¿Y dónde encontrar la salsa verde más rica en San Antonio? Because you're the travel foodie. The Delta SkyMiles Reserve American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/reserve.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/StarTalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/StarTalk today.
Welcome to StarTalk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. StarTalk begins right now. Welcome back to StarTalk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, your host, and I'm an astrophysicist with the American Museum of Natural History in New York City, where I also serve as director of the Hayden Planetarium. Joining me is my special guest host, Chuck Nice.
Hey, man.
Nice Chuck Nice.
That's nice Chuck Nice. Thanks for having me back, Neil.
Well, people might want to know why I said nice Chuck Nice.
Oh, that's because you can follow me on Twitter at nice Chuck Nice.
Chuck Nice was already taken? Was that?
You know what? Oddly enough, it was.
So, welcome back. This is our special Super Bowl break edition of StarTalk Radio.
Yeah.
I know you're a football fan from way back.
Huge.
Out of control football fan.
Huge. I love it. It's like crack to me.
You get in a football mood?
Yes, I do.
You just love?
I love everything about it. I'm telling you right now, I got a little stiffy just talking about it right now. Okay?
TMI. For today, I brought in one of my longtime friends and colleagues, Professor Charles Liu. He's professor of astrophysics at the City University of New York. Charles, welcome to StarTalk Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. Hi, Chuck.
Let me say why I've got him on here.
Yeah.
A couple of years back, he wrote an essay on the physics of baseball, and he did all kinds of cool calculations about what baseball would be like on the moon. And I figured, well, I need him for my football show, because then he'll do all these weird, crazy, geeked-out calculations for what goes on in football.
Cool.
And you get to comment on our interviews that we have for this segment. Do you know who Chuck, do you know who I managed to get?
No.
Three football players from the New York Giants.
That's very cool.
It was very cool.
Aside for the fact that they're from the New York Giants, because I'm an Eagles fan.
You're an Eagles fan.
Yeah.
Well, get over it.
Right.
Tight end Travis Beckham.
Okay.
And special teams captain and linebacker Chase Blackburn.
Okay.
And another linebacker, Jonathan Coff.
Good guys.
Yeah, good guys.
That's pretty cool.
And on the very first segment with them, we talked about what makes the best tackle and how you might try to take someone down who's in motion. So let's see what they have to say. And Charles, when we come back, I want your analysis of this conversation.
I'll do my best.
All right. Let's check it out. Do you actually invoke laws of physics you learn in your engineering class to become a better linebacker?
You could say, yeah, but it's actually something that you learn as a young football player, and that's the low man wins.
Low man wins. I've heard that.
Leverage.
And so you want to come in at what point in the person's body?
You want your hat under their hat.
Oh, okay. Oh, you call them hats?
Yes.
How polite. Well, my cap, yes. Okay, so you want your cap, your helmet under their helmet. What does that then do for you?
It gives you better leverage and puts you in a better position. So if you're a smaller guy, it puts you in a better position to control the blocker.
And so it helps if you can crouch a little lower than others can.
Yes.
So why aren't people just slithering along the ground to get to their people's ankles, to get as low as humanly possible?
You get some power.
Oh, you start losing power when you get real low. So it's whatever's the best combination of how low you get, yet still get to use your leg strength.
Yeah, right.
With the speed coming down, you know, it's obviously you meet force with force when you come out.
Uh-huh. So that's where it all comes from. A lot of people think that it's your upper body. It's really your legs and what you have underneath them.
So, Jonathan, tell me about leg power. If you're going to block someone, the most obvious thing you're using is your upper body. So how do the legs play out?
Your legs and your hips. Those are the most important things. But that's where you generate all of your power, all of your momentum. That it gets started, you know, with your legs. You don't need to have phenomenal bench press to be able to deliver those big hits or to create separation between yourself and a blocker. It all starts with your legs. And if you can get good acceleration with your legs going, then everything else comes.
If you had the choice of tackling a tall person or a short person, who would you be most effective at tackling?
Tall.
I would taller.
I mean.
Bigger target.
Get the legs and wrap them up. They can't drive. Same thing. If you're tackling, you hit a guy up high, they can still move their legs and drive.
And there's still something going on in the play if their legs are still touching.
And if you can get a taller guy and you take him on thigh level or waist level and wrap up the legs, can't go anywhere.
He's out. So why aren't there more little players, or are there, in football?
Running backs. Yeah, a lot of running backs are shorter.
We got Ahmad Bradshaw back there for us.
How tall is he?
He's got to be
5'9".
5'2"?
He might be like 5'9".
So he's a little fire plug then.
Yeah.
And what does he weigh?
Much more than
200 plus or minus. Yeah.
There's a lot of guys in the league that it's starting to come back. Like Barry Sanders, one of the greatest running backs of all time. Yeah. He may have been 5'10".
Darren Sproles?
Darren Sproles.
My data here says he's 5'6", maybe?
Yeah, a lot of the running backs now are. But they also have those thick legs that drive, too.
Just let me alert the listening audience that Jonathan Coff, linebacker for the New York Giants, majored in mechanical engineering in college. And Chase Blackburn was a math major. Charles, what does that do for you?
Well, that explains why it sounded a heck of a lot like a NASA engineer conversation just now at Goddard Space Flight Center. But
Rather than the New York Giants locker room.
Yeah, pretty much. It's quite amazing. But actually, they're quite right. The center of mass makes all the difference in terms of whether you're able to stop somebody. Now, what's interesting is, of course, the center of mass for most men is just above the belly button, whereas for most women, it's just below. So what that means is these short guys you refer to, like Darren Sproles, Ahmad Bradshaw, their centers of mass are more like women in the sense of further down in their legs, which makes them more effective in driving. But I wonder if they'd rather tackle a short guy 10 times or a tall guy 10 times. Because you want to hit Brandon Jacobs, who's 6'4", 250, 10 times? You can stop him the first time. It'd be fun. But
I don't want to hit him at all. It's huge.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting that a single tackle, you want to tackle the big guy. But by the fourth quarter, I'll bet you'd rather go for Darren Sproles any day of the week.
Because he's beating you down, the big guy.
That's right.
The big guy, yeah. So the little guy is much less mass coming at you, and it works for you, is what you're saying.
I think so.
And so this thing about women with a lower center of mass, is it just because they're shorter or because their hips bring some weight below the belt that would otherwise be above the belt for men?
It has to do with the anatomical structure.
So that explains why it's so damn hard for me to tackle women.
I'll leave that to you, Chuck.
You're listening to Star Talk Radio, and let's go back to my interview with my three New York Giants football players, Travis Beckham, tight end, Chase Blackburn, he's a special teams what do we call him? He's a captain linebacker, and Jonathan Coff. And this time we're going to talk about sort of what it might take to escape a tackle and what kind of force you'd feel if, in fact, you felt one. An NFL lineman hitting with a full force carries about 2,500 pounds into his opponent. Mm-hmm. And that's like a VW Beetle on that point of impact. Does it feel like that in a tackle? Or is the equipment just so well designed around your body that that's just a walk in the park?
I mean, it's by no means a walk in the park, but it doesn't feel like you're just standing in the middle of the road as a VW Beetle, you know, comes and takes your head off.
So it's not like you're standing in the middle of a road.
Right.
Okay.
Right, no, because you're going at them also. I mean, and because he's bigger, I mean, he has more mass, and so he won't be able to move quite as quickly. And so that's where I need to use my athleticism to generate more speed than he is, and then to try to overcome the force.
the force.
Yeah, you hit a, you know,
you hit a feel the force.
Back, you hit a big running back up high, flush, like, you know, squared up head to head. It's going to feel a lot worse than you tackle a guy from the side.
Right. So the relative velocities are very different.
Yeah, it's all about the angle of the tackle and everything else.
Yeah. And but if you're watching where you're going, you're not really going to have the occasion to come straight head on.
Right.
You're trying to avoid it.
Goal line.
Yeah, you almost never line up and just go.
It seems almost magic how a quarterback can avoid a tackle. I don't know what's going on there. They're there ready to try to pass. Somebody's running after them, and they just sort of step to the side, and the guy just falls on his face.
Yeah.
Or they spin a little bit with just a little bit on the shoulder. What's going on with the quarterback? They just have high experience away from heavy people?
Just looking out of your peripherals, I think that Vic would probably be the best person to
Michael
talk
Vick.
About, yes. And the way he just sees people, and then he does a spin move a lot.
Plus, he's quick, so if you're going to tackle where he is at this moment, in the next split second, he's in another place, yeah, and your body is out of position.
You never really
got a handle on him.
Plus, I also think with all the rules in place for the quarterbacks to protect him, a lot of the defensive players are so nervous about hit that there's such a small target on a quarterback you can hit without a personal foul that it's kind of like when you're going out and rushing full speed as a defensive player and you have to think for that split second, that's it.
Once you
think in the game of football, it's over. You have to react.
So it has to be your life experience
telling
your body what to do without even processing.
You have to react. Right.
So they're telling you not to think on a football field. What does that mean, Chuck?
Well, look at that. It means that I could play football. Anything that requires no thinking at all. I'm a Viking. Wow, it's like a learned instinct.
I think, Charles, is that what they're meaning there?
You see, the typical rushing lineman is moving about 20 miles an hour, which is about 30 feet per second. Average human reaction time is about 0.2 seconds. So if you have to react after you see something, you're already 6 feet past the quarterback. Mm-hmm. So you really have to rely on that animal instinct, that learned instinct that has nothing to do with the thinking processes in your head in order to catch him. Otherwise, he's long gone by the time you thought, oh, I got to go that way.
So this one is split-second timing of the action and the reaction of the tackle.
Yeah, and that's what the training is so important, the repetition, so that your body is used to moving without having to think about it first.
Yeah, plus the guy ready to tackle the quarterback is probably much more massive than the quarterback himself. So presumably the quarterback is more nimble.
Yeah.
Right.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be quarterback.
Right.
And a hell of a lot more scared, which helps you not have to think.
Yeah. Well, there are big quarterbacks now, actually.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Right. As you're getting smaller running backs, you're getting bigger quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, not only are they tall enough to see over the linemen and see the passing.
I always wondered how they see past that line.
Yeah, they're 6'5".
It's like the wall of China. How do you even know what's going on?
In fact, the front line has to make passing lanes. The way they block, they make it so that the quarterback can actually see.
They should have periscopes. So <can see it.
laughs> That's a new helmet equipment addition there.
Let's go to my next clip real quick. And it talks about spinning moves and whether anything you might learn in a ballet class would help your football.
The easiest way to spin out of someone is if they have all of their force on one shoulder. It's easy to spin the other way. It's very hard to spin it if someone's coming to tackle you and their head up on you. And if they hit you square in the middle, it's very hard to spin. Say, for instance, I'm running at you and you're coming at my upfield shoulder, you're going to hit my right shoulder. It's very easy to spin to my left because all of your force is going that way.
So you don't know in advance, until contact is made, what's the best way to undo that?
I like to shuffle my feet and see where they go, and whichever they go, it's easy.
So you do like a Muhammad Ali thing with your feet to try to shake them?
And spinning like a bee.
Although the reason on defense that we like it when offensive players spin is because as an offensive man, you're the only man with the ball. And in defense, you have 11 guys out there going for that ball. So when someone spins on the first defensive player, there's usually one or two guys coming to hit him.
Especially
so as soon as he spins, the ball's out. And that's the risk of spinning in the NFL.
Oh, because if you're spinning, the ball is away from the spin point, and now you're exposed.
Yeah.
Okay, my colleague posed this question. Many defense pass rushers will spin their bodies when they rush the quarterback. Dwight Freeney of the Indianapolis Colts may have the best such spin move in the NFL today. They're basically doing a ballet spin in the air to avoid blockers, and then they rush straight to the target. Is that spin move generally better than a straight bull rush? Or is it just that Freeney does it so well that it's sort of uniquely effective for him?
It's the mix-up of it.
They complement each other.
Yeah, if you're bull rush one time and the offensive tackle's deep setting for you and trying to come at you, trying to get his leverage, expecting you to just bull rush him, that's when you want to hit the spin move.
Keep
on
him guessing.
Yeah, because right. if they get up, especially if they're deep setting because of your speed, they deep set to your upfield shoulder. So as soon as they do that, you kind of lean into them to get them to guess that way,
and then you take them.
Then you roll back underneath, spin move underneath.
So this is a mind game at that point.
Yeah. Right. It's like a chess match. Yeah.
Chess match. In the old days, there were these videos of football coaches teaching their players ballet. Are these sort of tiptoe moves still taught for your agility? And
I heard some guys do ballet.
Yeah, I mean,
if someone's going to do it, they'll do that on their own.
Not tell anybody about it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. You don't
know where I'm going. Leave the tutu back at home.
A whole football field of tutus.
We're going to a commercial break, but when we return, a whole conversation about football injuries. Stay tuned on Star Talk Radio.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in One offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
To a special edition of Star Talk Radio during this Super Bowl week. I had the privilege of interviewing three NFL football players, and it's Travis Beckham, Chase Blackburn, and Jonathan Coff. Two of them were science and math majors in college, which is pretty cool. You want to follow us, Star Talk Radio. We're on the web, startalkradio.net, and find us on Facebook, Star Talk Radio. And guess what our Twitter handle is? Star Talk Radio. And my special guest today is my colleague Charles Liu, astrophysicist and all-around calculator of geeky things. So
we're thanks a lot, dude.
We're going to come back to you after this next clip, where I talked to these New York Giants about what they do when they strip the ball from anyone's possession and the pile-on that results. Let's see what they tell us. It didn't seem to me that back in the 70s or 80s. That, you know, tackle people aim for the ball. It seems like it's happening all the time today.
It's something that's taught now. Every coach teaches
it's
it.
Taught.
Special teams, everything.
Ball.
Offense, especially now, teaches it. I mean, you sit in on those meetings and they talk about if the defense gets an interception or a fumble recovery, that's what they're taught to do now is strip the ball because defensive guys aren't used to running with the ball.
With the ball. Say it like a loaf of bread. That's how they carry it.
So it's there for the pickings.
Yeah, yes, exactly. That's it.
And also, if you look at the statistics for teams that win the turnover battle, the teams that create the most turnovers, that have the best ratio. Those are the teams that are going to win the most games.
He's calling them coaches.
I was
going to
say,
way.
How do you not know the exact percentage throughout the league with all
let me go get my PowerPoints. I saved all the PowerPoints.
I think it's like 80 some percent.
I mean, in the old days, they might have seen someone try to knock it out of your hands, but if you hit it with a helmet, it's almost impossible to keep holding that.
Think of somebody running full speed at you with a helmet right at that football.
It's aiming for the football.
It's very hard to hold that football. That's why a lot of times you see guys holding the football with two hands. And there's times where I've been running with the ball and they've tried to put their pad on the ball and they haven't and it hit my forearm and that's not a very good. And just think about that pressure on the football. It's very hard to.
Right, and the form is not protected.
No, it's not at all.
Yeah. And I guess to draw an analogy, it's a lot like hitting a nail with a hammer and your helmet sometimes ends up being the head of the hammer.
Right. When the ball's bouncing around and it's live. For you guys, it seems to be quite dangerous because that's when the piling on happens.
Yeah.
Somebody goes in, grabs the ball, and who determines who has possession of the ball?
Whoever comes up with it.
No. There are 14 guys in a pile, and they just peel them off one at a time.
Yeah. Whoever comes up with the ball.
Whoever ends with it.
So if you and I have equal grip on the ball,
it's not going to happen.
We're going to fight it out.
Somebody we're gonna.
One of us is going to get it.
And there's
I'm betting on John.
There's some bad stuff in there that happens.
Bad stuff in there. Yeah. So. I mean, there's any biting or?
I mean, there's
everything's happening.
But I mean, you have you can't really tape bite, where people getting punched in the down there and people getting stepped on and people getting eyes poked and
right.
Oh yeah.
It gets dirty down there.
It's like throwing a fresh piece of meat in the lines then.
So, Charles, it must be a lot of force if you're in the bottom of that pile.
Oh, yeah. So you're suffering.
Let's say it's probably not 14 guys, but let's say 8 guys are on top of you, and they're 250 pounds each. You're talking 2,000 pounds.
Yeah. That's a Volkswagen Beetle right on top
right,
of your
just
chest.
Just driving on top of your
that's
chest.
That's right. And the thing is, of course, the ball is a prolate spheroid, right? Just... So, all right, that's geek for football shape, okay?
Yes.
What that means is that...
It's a football.
Football, right. Yes.
It bounces like crazy. You don't know where it's going to go depending on whatever force. So the next guy piles on, suddenly it squirts that way. Next guy comes on, squirts the other way. But tacking a ball is also all about physics. The reason it's being coached now is because coaches figured out that it takes much less force to actually knock a ball out of a kid's hands than it is to actually take the guy down. It actually requires less force.
Okay, so they're invoking the laws of physics to...
improve their ability to win the game.
Okay.
Gotcha. So it's easier to strip a ball than it is to tackle a guy.
Absolutely, in all cases.
In retrospect, this sounds kind of obvious. I don't know why they didn't figure that out 50 years ago. Well, maybe they didn't have physics 101.
I think that might have something to do with it.
Well, you know, a big problem these days are helmet-to-helmet hits, and I had to bring that up and find out where that was, and where it's going to go. Let's find out the latest on that.
Nowadays, you have these guys in the NFL that just lay people out. They just knock people out, whether it takes
and they do it
leg.
With their helmet going into your helmet.
Yeah.
Head-to-head.
And that's the worst part. I mean, if you want to strive yourself on being a hard hitter and knocking people out, hit someone in the chest. Hit someone...
that still looks good on the highlight reel.
In the stomach. Hit somebody in the shoulders. When you hit somebody in their head where it messes up their cognitive skills and all that stuff, like, you shouldn't take pride in that. That's like you're knocking someone out based on something that they have no control.
I think probably taking a cheap shot at an opposing player, but it's football, you know.
It's
by
sport.
Any means necessary, you know. Get your job done.
But there's a law now against.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the law?
You're not allowed to kill helmet to helmet.
Yeah. On a defenseless receiver is the key term.
There's no helmet to helmet contact on a defenseless receiver, and there's no helmet to helmet period quarterback. On quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So I'm a pass receiver. Yeah. I don't have the ball yet. Now I have the ball. You can't hit your helmet to my helmet?
Have you had an opportunity to make a football move?
And it's how you tackle them. Like, if you're lunging at someone, like, if you're attempting to go helmet to helmet, then yes. If the receiver is running and he ducks and you're going for a tackle,
it's a judgment call.
Different stuff. Yeah. It's where you can get fined, you can get penalized in the game and fined the week after, but you can actually send it in for an argument.
For review.
And then they could actually take your fine away, and usually it's $7,500.
Uh-huh.
Some of the hits are arguable, but during the game, they call it flag. It's a flag.
But the hardest part is the fact that, you know, a lot of times these balls are thrown, and a receiver may bobble it, or as they're catching,
they're not in control yet.
Yeah, but as a defensive player, you're aiming at their chest. But as they bobble the ball, it's going to the ground. They're going down to duck to get it.
Okay.
As they're doing that, your target area that you've already aimed for was their chest. Now, that in that same area is now their head because they just dropped.
That's, yeah, they're basically giving us a strike zone.
Yeah, at the heat of the moment, it's so hard to change your strike zone as another player is moving.
Yeah, I mean, this injury stuff is something else. And I then spoke to them once we talked about helmet-to-helmet butt-heading behavior.
You butthead.
I asked them about concussions because it's one thing to just say we hit heads, but now right. What happens to your brain? Let's find out.
Have you guys all had concussions?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't.
So why did you said, oh, yeah, and Travis says, I haven't.
I mean, I've blacked out.
Oh, so it's a matter of the definition.
It's a matter of what you say. That's the thing about it now is concussions have been graded so much differently now. Every head injury is now looked at. That's why there's so many more concussions.
Oh, okay.
Where in the past, the same head injury wasn't even looked.
Yeah, they just slap you, put you back in the next line.
A lot of times people get concussions and don't remember what happened. I remember in high school, we were playing a green team. I got knocked out and opened my eyes and all I could see was green.
But that's not a concussion.
They only lasted a couple plays. No, but the thing is, I remembered everything. Nowadays, you got guys that they can't even like open their eyes and look at light, or a week later can't even remember anything.
Yeah. Okay, so part of the problem is the helmets are rigid. If you made a soft helmet, then the brain is not going to get the jolt because there'll be a cushion, a padded.
Which is what the padding is underneath that hard shell of the helmet.
Well, this is already supposed to do that.
Yeah. And they're working so on that again this year. That's one of the things they're working on is compression of the helmets and everything like that.
Okay. Travis, I read your bio. You broke your leg in college.
Well, it was actually my senior year, and it was actually a very tough year for me because I started the season with a hamstring injury, so I missed the first three games, came back, played four more games, and then I broke my leg. I was actually blocking. My running back got tackled onto my leg, broke my fibula, blah, blah, blah.
Your fibula is in your shin.
You're out.
So it got broken with you getting tackled?
No, I was blocking, and our running back got tackled and tackled on my leg.
Oh, gotcha. So in a way, that was a secondary incident that broke the leg.
Yeah, injuries is a part of the game, and that's one thing you're going to have to face.
So in a way, a nice, clean bone break, that's the best kind of injury.
Yeah.
It's not your knee, it's not your brain.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's 100% injury rate in this game, in this league. I mean, anything from a broken finger to something that's going to end your career, like blowing out your knee.
What percentage of players leave the game because of injuries?
I would say most do, even if they're not career-ending per se, but...
And you're speaking to me with your arm in a sling now.
Exactly. I mean, I just had surgery on Friday, so.
And your surgery was on what?
I had my labrum repaired and ended up being my bicep tendon reattached.
That just sounds painful. Yeah. Reattach your bicep tendon.
Yeah. It was week one I had this actually happen, so I played the entire season with this.
If it's not necessarily messing you up while you play, what is it, 5 years later, this really
catches up.
Yeah, and it cannot be a career-ending injury like, hey, this is it that day, but my shoulders could catch up to me in a few years, or, you know, the knees may not be that instant when they happen, but a few years later, they're going to eventually slow you down, so it can become a career-ending injury.
What part of your body hurts the most after a game?
Shoulders and
shoulders, yeah.
Your shoulder, but that's where you got all the plastic stuff.
That's why, even with all the plastic.
Because I see all the layers, and each layer kind of diffuses the force to spread it out as evenly as possible. Yeah. Still, it's your shoulders.
That's how much force there is in a game of football.
That's why football players have big shoulders and big necks. Because if they didn't, they'd be dead. there that is. So, Charles, what's your reaction to all this injury talk?
Well, first of all, helmet-to-helmet has been going on for a long time. You guys may remember a guy named Fred the Hammer Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
Kansas City Chiefs. That was all he did. But beyond that, when you have hard helmets, I know...
He later had a big career in blaxploitation films in
that's
the 70s.
What, that's right. Yeah, the problem is that when you've got hard helmets hitting each other, the time for the impact goes down, and therefore the impulse
goes up. So it's an elastic collision.
Exactly. So you're actually transferring much more force in a very short time, even though you do have padding on the inside.
So they really should be the leatherheads.
Yeah, soft helmets.
That's right.
Like in the old days. Keep the whatever's inside, but they should soften it, and that way the headbutt takes longer for it to... execute the contact.
Right. It's like whether you have a bumper that crushes with your car or whether a really hard piece, it transfers a lot more energy.
What they should do is just grow giant afros.
When we come back, more of our special Super Bowl break Start Off program.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Star Talk Radio, our special Super Bowl break edition.
We've had the pleasure and the privilege of having three New York Giants football players on Star Talk. They visited me in my office at the Hayden Planetarium. Two of them have backgrounds in science. Chase Blackburn was a math major and at the University of Akron in Ohio, and Jonathan Goff majored in mechanical engineering. And where did he go to school? He was at
Vanderbilt.
At Vanderbilt, that's right. Mm-hmm. And we have Travis Beckham, a tight end. He was the youngest of the three of them, even a little spunkier than the rest. And it was funny hearing him talk about the fact that he runs faster than the other two. He made them sound like old-timers. It was funny. They're all born in like the mid-80s. This is what was crazy about it. And so, Charles, yeah. what you do weird calculations about things, and that's why I brought you on the show.
Yep.
What can you tell me about the football enterprise and what the uninitiated listener might want to know?
Well, I got to tell you, football is the perfect example of how physics is actually fun.
Mm.
Everything we love about football is applied physics, everything from blocking and tackling to the Hail Mary, right? When you have a football that's flying out 50 yards toward the end zone with 3 seconds left, that ball is actually traveling almost exactly the same way an artillery shell fires, because when you shoot the artillery shell out, it has rifling in the barrel that makes the shell spin.
So they spin. That gives it stability.
Exactly. Increases the ability for it to hit its target in a nice trajectory. And that's part of the reason why quarterbacks will spin the ball when they throw it.
So they can legitimately call it the bomb.
There is no question about it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just one tiny example of how the physics just translates and translates out. And you can figure everything. We were talking earlier about how the reason people go for the ball these days instead of just trying to tackle the runner is because it takes less force to remove a ball from a runner than it is actually to stop the runner from running.
And less energy on top of that.
Right.
So if you analyze it physically, you can just become a better team.
Absolutely.
So you can have a whole team, 11 guys who are skinny,
who just know how to strip the ball. and they're the best defense in football.
Football is...
with calculators, you know. Well, I got you on that one.
Football is an incredibly cerebral game. You look
at
a typical...
Awesome.
Yeah, you look in a playbook, and there are 200 plays in there that these guys have to learn.
Yeah.
So basically, it would actually benefit you to have a bunch of smart dudes on your team.
Absolutely.
Well, smart dudes who can run fast away from those who can try to get them.
Or like you said, Neil, smart guys with calculators just like, okay, Ignatius, I'm going to need you down at the 20-yard line.
right.
Just waiting.
As long as they're really, really strong.
So on my next clip, I had to ask these guys, because these are big guys. They're 6'4", 240 pounds or whatever, and they look like football players. I had to ask him, what goes on in the locker room? Are you guys like, is there a pissing contest there or what? Let's see what they say.
What is the measure these days of who's the strongest in the locker room? Is it the bench press?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which makes no sense. Because
I know. It's old school. I understand. It's old school. But something's got to happen in the old school way. So what can you bench, Travis?
Now, my shoulder is so messed up. The most I benched was 460.
That's with a messed up shoulder?
No. Okay. Well, that's when my shoulder was good.
Okay, Jonathan?
Same as Travis. Well, 465.
Man. Tommy Topper. 470, I mean. Yeah,
okay. No, 470? Seriously?
No. Obviously, I can't bench at all right now with my shoulder in a sling, but I think 440 is about as much as I went up to.
So does that still have bragging rights in the locker room?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
There's guys, what are these, 600?
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Chris
Knees.
Bench 600.
Chris Knees.
Yeah. One of our rookies, actually.
I didn't know you could fit that much mass on the bar. Yeah. Well, that's when the bar starts bending.
Yes, it pretty much does.
Yeah. Okay, now how about in the thigh lift?
Squat.
Yeah.
It all depends because a lot of guys, if you have injuries, you have to do, you can do front squats on a slide machine or you can do leg press. It all depends on, it's all relative to what exercise you're doing. I mean, a lot of guys can leg press 1,000 pounds or so, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's not on leg press, but now if you're squatting 1,000 pounds,
that's
something to be said.
Yeah, good leg press, your whole body is supported. You're just pushing weight off of you.
Yeah.
If you look at people in the Olympics with very strong legs, they're not necessarily huge, they're just very well defined. And so where's the trade-off between getting super mondo thighs and having thighs that can actually serve your needs on the field?
I think that it's the way you use them. I think if that's the case, you would think that ice skaters would have huge legs.
Speed skaters?
Yeah, figure skaters or whatever. I think that to base off of any sport, I'd say football players probably have the most defined bodies. And it's just the way we use them. I think football is a sport where you need to use every single muscle in your body.
Every muscle in the body.
Wow.
Chuck, how many muscles do you have in your body?
I think I have four. I'm pretty sure I have about four, maybe six tops.
On a good day.
On a good day, that four becomes six.
But there's a whole other philosophy here, obviously. In the old days, the guy would you flex your bicep, and if you had the biggest bicep, you say, oh, that's cool. But what good is that other than flexing when you need all your muscles to take somebody down who's running with the ball?
A punter is not going to need biceps. Right.
Right.
A punter is going to use one. By the way, there are about 650 muscles in the human body, just so you know. But anyway.
Maybe your body.
Well, for my body, they're really small. But you've got a situation where a punter is going to kick a ball 50 yards or something in the air. He's not going to need biceps. He's going to need massive quadriceps. Oh, by the way, depending on which direction the field is facing, the spin of the earth will actually cause a punted football to slide to the left or the right.
You're not talking about the Coriolis force, are you?
I am indeed talking about the Coriolis force.
You're totally geeking me out
now. Hey, it's awesome.
This is the force that generates hurricanes on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
If any air mass moves north or south, it's coming from a different part of the Earth that has a different sideways rotational speed, and it either overshoots the center or pulls behind it.
Right.
And when that happens, you can spin a storm in the northern hemisphere. They all spin counterclockwise.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
And so you kick a ball.
About 50 yards, the ball will move 1/4 inch either to the left or the right, depending on whether you're kicking north, south, or east-west.
But that's because
or if you're in the north or southern hemisphere.
And you're kicking you're kicking during a hurricane. This is the problem.
No, the Coriolis force doesn't need a hurricane to operate.
Okay.
Yeah, right. So I bet there are a couple of kicks that missed by 1/4 inch.
It happens, yeah. It's a game of inches, or in this case, quarters.
The earth hates me. That's why I missed that field goal. The earth hates me.
Well, in Cowboys Stadium, which just opened a few years ago, you actually had a punter which hit the big screen above, and that completely changed the path of the ball, too.
Yeah, if you hit a blunt object. Yeah, that would, thank you. That or the Coriolis force, one or the other. I also had to ask these guys about their diet, because where do you get your energy from? You get it from your food, from something you have slaughtered for the benefit of your own caloric intake. And so, get over it. Even vegetarians have to kill something to eat it, even if it's just a carrot. So, let's find out what my guys were telling me about diet and calories.
Do you guys count calories? What do you eat in a day?
I mean, I just try to eat balanced meals for the most part, especially in season.
Reese cups followed by ice cream. Balance that out. All the sugar food groups. So what you're saying is you just eat to stay healthy, but not in any...
You know your body. Everybody's body's different. I mean, you got to know yourself.
Yes, some guys are different. For instance, Kevin Boss, our tight end, is very strict in what he eats, and he gets mad at me when I sit down and eat because I got the cakes and all the like sweet stuff, and he's just like, oh, I want some of that, but I can't. Because a lot of guys have to deal with the being overweight, and you get fined if you're overweight.
What do you mean you get fined?
Exactly, see?
Yeah.
You get a window.
You got to be a certain window.
$500 a pound.
No.
Forfeit, my bad.
Something like that. So there is some weight that the coach has decided you should be, or some weight interval, and you come in after a cheeseburger weekend, 5 pounds overweight.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to that's an expensive cheeseburger.
That is a very expensive cheeseburger.
Oh, my gosh.
Per pound per day.
So what is your percent body fat?
Although
I'm sure
it does depend on, now, see, if you are overweight, they check your body fat. If your body fat is still below a certain point, then you're good.
That you're out. Okay.
That you're out.
All right. So you could build some muscle over the weekend. So what's your body fat?
I'm 11%.
Is that your ideal?
11%, and then I have to be between 240, 244.
Okay, Jonathan?
It depends on the time of year. So when I start training...
Tell me, you sound like a woodland creature.
Yes.
Yeah, in the spring when I'm hibernate. What do you mean?
I'll be around...
Full up schedule. What?
I'll be around 13 in the spring, and then I'll...
13%?
And I'll get down to about 10 or 11 come August.
Okay, and your weight?
240 to 250.
And above that, you start paying out?
Yeah.
Okay, and...
I'm about the same as John. Get up to about a 13 and 13 and a half and get down to about a 12 or just under, maybe an 11.
So that's not an NFL rule. That's just a New York Giants.
Oh, no.
It depends on the club.
Yeah, okay. Club. But everybody's got an incentive clause for this. So, Chuck, they charge you if you come in fat.
Look at that. And I thought models had it bad.
That's right.
These guys are just like, oh, dear, I could never.
Oh, I must be bulimic.
I'm going to have a salad. I'm just going to have a salad. I'm playing this weekend.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know. I don't even want to have that image, Chuck. But it's true. You need calorie equals energy.
Right.
You know, Charles, I once, again, my colleague Charles Liu, thanks for being on the show.
Sure.
I once saw, it was an ad for Snickers that said, high in energy, low in calories.
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's right.
A calorie is a measure of energy.
Is a measure of energy. That was an ad slogan guy who never had physics 101.
Yeah.
And so, when we come back, we will talk more about what the total weight of all their equipment is. You ever think it's like, you know, it weighs like 50 pounds or something?
Right, yeah.
It does not. And I ask them about it. They'll tell me about it.
Oh, and amongst that equipment are girdles.
Oh, come on.
Now, you were talking tutus earlier? We're talking girdles.
Charles, I don't even want to know why you know that. So.
We've got to take a quick break, but more Star Talk when we return.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
You are listening to a special edition of Star Talk Radio.
What in this Super Bowl break?
Yeah.
For a special episode of Star Talk, what other calculations have you done for us?
Well, I figured I would figure out what would happen if we played football on the moon.
They did golf on the moon. So
they did golf on the moon. Might as well have football. Turns out that your typical NFL quarterback will throw a ball 350 yards in the air before it comes down.
That would have to be a really big stadium.
That's cool.
So that'd be a Hail Mary squared. 350 yards.
Amazing.
So you would literally have to get in a car to go catch the ball.
Yes, I'm afraid so. But there is another way you can do it. If the quarterback happens to throw it really high upward in the air using a trajectory, then you can actually have the quarterback kind of amble slowly across that 350 yards and you can actually catch it.
Wait, all thrown footballs have trajectories.
Yeah, but
so what are you telling me here?
Take the angle and aim it really
very high trajectory.
As opposed to a low one.
High parabola.
Right. The ideal trajectory to get maximum distance is always 45 degree angle. Mm-hmm. But if you take it 60 or 70 degrees, you actually can give the runner enough time to make those 350 yards before you actually get it.
Okay.
Yeah. So that would be a fun.
So when we have moon colonies, we'll call it, you'll be on the sideline recalculating all plays for moon gravity.
It would be my pleasure.
It'd be a 1/6 gravity situation.
Right. Now,
and what would be great in 1/6 gravity is the goal line stands where you have the running back where they want to jump over the line.
Oh yeah.
Oh, but that's it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
You get that launch. You get that ballet
like a
music.
15-foot vertical.
Trying to play football in space.
In fact, it can only jump over the line. It could jump over the goalpost.
Exactly, right.
You wouldn't have to kick a field goal. You could just jump the field goal.
Right. You score a touchdown and the extra point all in the same play. That's pretty awesome.
Well, I got another clip here of my three New York Giants football players who came to my office at the Hayden Planetarium. Let's find out what they said. I was curious about just what equipment everybody's wearing these days. And it looks like it's heavy and that they would impede their ability to move, but apparently not. So let's find out.
Jonathan, you majored in mechanical engineering. As an engineer, is there any change in the football gear that you could suggest that would make the game better or faster or safer?
I haven't had an opportunity to do enough research to give you...
Good answer. Answer. I've not done my research. It's better than just making stuff up.
Yeah, right?
How much does all of our stuff weigh?
Yeah, what is the weight of all that gear?
Oh, it depends if you wear thigh pads, knee pads, and all that. If you're counting your cleats, it's about 8 to 10 pounds.
Yeah.
Only?
Yeah, it's about 8 to 10 pounds.
Helmets have gotten so much lighter because I remember when you're in high school, that's only 10 years ago now, and the helmets then were so much heavier.
You got to look at it and say, yeah, it's 10 pounds, but you have guys that when they run at the combine, run a 4.3 flat with nothing on and get onto this football field and can't run a 4.6.
Yeah, football speed. That's the difference in football speed.
That's how much it does, yeah.
It's still in the way.
Yeah. That and all the, from a mental standpoint, the game will slow you down a little bit. It will slow some people down.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I look at a helmet, it doesn't look like you have full peripheral vision, but somehow quarterbacks always know when someone's coming up behind them. What kind of view do you have out the side of your helmet?
A decent view, you do, and
but you have to do a lot of head turning just to see.
Yeah. As a quarterback, when a defense lines up, also you kind of have an idea of which side they're going to blitz from. When they're making out calls, they're setting their protection to block a certain way, so they're expecting someone to come free. Like if we bring a blitz on the defense that has too many defenders for them to pick up, we bring one more than they have to block. They know where that free defender's coming from,
right?
So they kind of have an idea of where already to be peeking at.
The gloves that I see you guys sometimes wear, is it to keep your hand warm? Is it to give better friction with the ball? What's the point of the gloves?
It's to give you better grip of the ball.
So is the glove made of a special material that's basically glues itself to the ball, like Velcro, or not?
Yeah, not so much glue, but...
Literally, but...
Yeah. Well, yeah, your gloves will adhere to the ball a little more.
Is this why pass receivers, I can see, put up their hand and the ball just sticks to the hand?
And the size of their hand also has something to play in that, too.
Yeah, and the big mitts they got, that'll definitely help.
I think it makes my fingers feel stronger. It may be. A lot of stuff plays a mental toll.
Yeah.
But if it's doing that, I'm going to keep going for it. But my fingers just feel much more weak.
It's a placebo, though. I mean, a lot of things in the NFL, there's a saying that look good, feel good, play good.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the equipment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Charles, you were telling me during the break that there were some changes in the equipment over the years.
In the a few decades ago, the guys would just wear a simple athletic supporter.
But you mean jockstrap, you mean?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But now they wear full-fledged girdles.
Girdles. Are,
yeah. This is...
Wait, Charles, how do you know this?
That's another show.
Fine. Yeah. Okay.
The basic point is...
So that it's a full form-fit girdle.
That's right. And it protects...
Were they worried about panty lines or something with their jockstrap? What?
Well, I don't know, but they have the entire groin area protected. They've got pockets where you can take pads.
That's why you don't see... lines of undergarments on their within their uniform.
Precisely.
So they're basically wearing Spanx.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, they are.
Yeah.
There was actually at least one or two running backs in the 70s and 80s who wore women's girdles for a period of time until this actually evolved into modern regular equipment. So the helmets have also changed. You were mentioning peripheral vision in that segment there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true that humans usually can see about 200 degrees.
Right, so 180 is left, complete, exactly,
right,
left
exact
to right.
Left, right.
And so, a little bit of extra on each side.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
right.
So the helmets have been made so that there are more gaps along the side so people can actually take advantage of all those distances. And then I guess this thing, you mentioned the gloves at the very end, right?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Before the gloves, there was something called stick'em.
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 Yes.
And what was that?
Well, just a spray-on adhesive. It's actually legal in certain sports, like pole vault, okay, because you don't want to let go of the pole while you're halfing. But
but you do, at some point, to let go of the – so it
that's
sticks,
right.
But not too much.
Not too much, okay. Exactly. So Lester Hayes was an Oakland Raiders player who used a lot of stick'em in his day. And
take a brush and paint it on his arms.
Okay. So that's
that anything that came in contact with him would be stuck to him like flypaper.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's illegal now. It's illegal now. But the materials that the gloves are made of have a perfect combination of what they call squeeze, which is the ability to catch the ball, and tack, which is the ability for it to rub. And people can still find a way to get it sticky by covering it with water or sugar water and then washing it off just before the game.
So you get a residue of the sugar left on it.
That's right.
You're listening to Star Talk Radio. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, your host. We'll see you again next week. And as always, I bid you to keep looking up.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.